You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight podcast, our weekly podcast just around business, the economy, and what's going on in and around South Africa. For today, it's a bit of a follow-on from our last podcast where we are talking about the banking sector strike. And today we are joined on the line by Matthew Parks, who is the parliamentary coordinator for the Congress of South African Trade Unions, that is COSATU, and we are just going to be having a conversation just around the banking sector strike together with some of the economic plans that have been laid out by the finance ministry and you know, the position of COSATU on some of those matters and what the possible impact could be going forward. How are you, Matthew?
I'm good, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. I think just, you know, for our listeners out there, what is the sort of the latest position at the moment around the banking sector strike? Where are we? Should we be expecting any further action? And is the 7th of October labor action still set to take place from you?
No, the 7th of October has been postponed as part of the court judgment placing an interdict on our strike. So we have submitted an appeal to the Labour Court, which has been granted to appeal the interdict, but it'll probably take a little bit of time. But in the meantime, we have also resubmitted our strike application papers to NEDLAC, and that should be dealt quite quickly. But look, I mean, the core issue remains. The Labour Court judgment is just a small bump in the road. But the fundamental issue of banking workers being retrenched by the big four banks remains on the table. It's hitting our workers quite hard. It's something that's been happening for the past several years, that all of the big four banks have retrenched on average 1,500 workers each. So until that issue is stopped and the banks actually switch to actually creating jobs, not retrenching workers, we're going to be maintaining the pressure. We were quite pleased by the amount of publicity and mobilization and support that our banking workers union, SASPO, received from the public and for bank workers for the strike. So they're still mobilizing. So it should happen in the near future, and we're maintaining the pressure until the banks come to the party. And also we were quite pleased last week by Capitec actually breaking ranks from the other big banks and saying, no, they're actually going to increase the amount of staff they have. They're going to employ an additional 600 employees, which is fantastic news, given that we're in an economy of 40% unemployment and where we've seen thousands of workers being retrenched in different sectors of the economy for the past couple of years.
Something that perhaps we wanted to also get your take on, I think the other day we were talking to the NEDLAC convener for Busa, and he was just mentioning the fact that some of these retrenchments that are going on in and around the sector have nothing to do with profitability, but rather changes in the landscape, particularly consumer behavior. People don't want to go into banks anymore, so they're turning towards technology and the like. So we should be looking at something different as opposed to labor action or taking to the streets. What do you say to that?
Look, we think the important thing is to recognize reality. It's unfortunate that business doesn't recognize reality of South Africa. We have 40% unemployment. It would take a lunatic to think that that's a positive situation or that's sustainable. That, in fact, is a ticking time bomb. But also the fact is that the banks, the big banks together, sit on assets, combined assets of about 7 trillion rand. Each of the big five banks have posted huge profits in the hundreds of billions of rand. Each of the big five banks pays their CEOs on average 150,000 rand every single day.
Yeah.
Yet the same banks pay on average their cashiers, the ordinary bank workers, 325 rand every day. They have enough space. They didn't need to retrench. There are changes in the economy, but there was no need for them to retrench. None of the banks is bleeding financially. None of them is buckling or collapsing or can't afford to keep these 1,500 workers each. And the fact that Capitec actually broke ranks and said, no, they're actually going to employ an additional 600 people. shows you what they can do. If the bank had a moral conscience, then it's also had an affection to them. They would have said, look, why can the bank do a reduction in salary, you know? They could have looked at alternative ways. And also the other thing is that we need to grow the economy, so we need the banks to be healthy, to be sustainable. But the banks themselves are not accessible to the majority of people in rural areas.
Yeah.
If you go to Limpopo, you'll only find the bank branches where your ordinary pensioners, grannies go to, people who don't use mobile technology, are in the town. The people have to travel distances of 50 kilometers, 80 kilometers to get from the villages, the farms, etc., to town. The banks are actually increasing the footprint, not shrinking it, to accommodate people in rural areas, small towns, informal areas, and so on. But instead, they're kind of being a little bit minimalistic and decreasing it. But look, also, we had a very progressive presidential job summit and investment summit hosted by the president last year, trying to get us out of this economic doldrums, to create jobs, a social compact between government, business, and labor.
Yeah.
And we're quite disappointed that BUSA, which was key to those engagements, doesn't see a contradiction towards committing to a jobs summit, and yet thinks it's okay to retrench workers. So, and also, look, the other thing is that the Sasco strike was part of, like any other strike, is about pushing employers to the negotiating table, to force them to negotiate. You don't strike because you want to strike. You strike to get the employers to negotiate. So we're hoping that this strike will kind of beat it into their head that they need to negotiate and find alternatives to retrenching workers.
Actually, on those alternatives, we would be interested to know what sort of alternatives you might want to offer, simply because, as we said in the beginning, part of the argument is that it's not that banks are not making money. It's simply that they're saying, why have these people there if they're not going to be doing anything, if, you know, certain parts of the business aren't being utilized anymore. So how do you tackle that particular problem where it's not that there isn't money being made, it's just that don't want to get into the banks anymore. Yeah, so what are they going to do?
There was actually a fantastic letter written to the Business Day on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Not by Kosatma, but by a middle-aged white guy in Cape Town, who said actually he agrees with Sasbo and Kosatu that actually the bank must employ more people. And he was relating his experience of going into a Nedbank branch in Cape Town where there was only one cashier on duty, one person at the information desk, and the queue to get help at the one desk was 30 minutes, the other queue was an hour. And I think all of us can relate to that experience. We go into the branches, because there's so few staff on duty, you actually wait an hour or so. It's almost as if the bank's actually trying to drive you away from coming to the branches, you know?
Yeah.
But not all of us are the same. You know, some of us who are, you know, you and I who are younger, we like using cell phone banking. But pensioners are never going to actually use cell phone banking. It's a different generation. The banks need to appeal to different audiences. But also, look, there are opportunities for the banks to actually grow a bigger customer base. There's demand for the banks. They should be actually making their products more affordable and accessible, you know, by charging lower interest rates. That way, SMEs or young people who want to start up their own small little companies will be able to access and afford their products better. That'll grow the customer base for the bank. The fact that the banks, I think it's FNB, you would go to FNB for a loan at 10% interest rates, affordable. They reject you because you don't meet the credibility, the criteria, the creditworthiness.
Yeah.
Then you go to next door to Direct Access, which charges you 25% interest rates. Is less sticky about your creditworthiness, but by Direct Access is owned by FNB. So they're kind of, you know, having their hands in both cookie jars, so to speak. So the banks have also kind of come to the party. And also, look, I mean, South Africa is not in a normal situation. We're not like Canada or Sweden, where things are fine. We're in a massive crisis of 40% unemployment.
Yeah.
And it'll take one day, a small little spark like you had in the North African countries where something small happens, and the entire society is up in arms, and there's a complete, you know, riots, devastation, and all that we've built up over decades will be destroyed. So it's about, you know, planning for the future, making sure everybody, especially the young, are given a chance. And banks have a key role in giving young people that chance.
Okay. So, yeah, young people need to be given a chance. There needs to be more that's done to support some of the small businesses. They need to be redirecting some of the profits that they're making in the banking sector towards actually improving the state of business and actually repurposing some of the people that are being said to be retrenched. At the same time, instead of having one person at a bank branch, rather have a couple, as related in the letter. So that's us. We are on the line with Matthew Parks, who is the parliamentary coordinator for COSATU. We're just going to take a quick break and we'll be back after this.
The cryptocurrency revolution is a rabbit hole that goes deeper than just Bitcoin and blockchain. South Africa's revolutionary cryptocurrency investment platform, Revix, presents Beyond Bitcoin, your guide to the crypto future. Unpack the news, trends, and terminology live every Monday on The Gareth Cliff Show on cliffcentral.com. You can also download every episode on the Cliff Central app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. This is a Business Day Spotlight. We are talking to Matthew Parks. He is the parliamentary coordinator for the Congress of South African Trade Unions. And he was just giving us an update just around what's going on with COSATU and that particular strike. And then on the other side of that, we'd have decided that just to take the conversation forward, perhaps we can look at what's been going on in the economy around the finance ministry and its plans for South Africa's economy. And just to begin with, Matthew, should the finance ministry be giving out economic policy? Is that something that they are mandated to do, or should this be the preserve of the economic of Ibrahim Patel's ministry, for example?
I mean, look, we welcome the principle of having a debate, and we're glad that government, including Treasury, realizes the extent of the economic crisis we're in. We've been raising this for quite a few years, but we have 40% unemployment, thousands being retrenched, 1% economic growth, SOEs on the verge of collapse. So we need that debate. But yeah, look, a part of our concern around the consultation process was that you had a Treasury document released without it having been properly processed and engaged upon by cabinet, by ministers. It spoke to all different departments' role. Often it wasn't actually factually well-informed, made wrong assumptions about different departments' responsibilities and so forth. It wasn't consulted through the NEDLAC process. It actually directly undermines the kind of social dialogue that we have between business, labor, and government and NEDLAC on how to grow the economy. So it really was quite problematic. It is almost like Treasury assumes that we don't have a Minister of Finance, but we have a Prime Minister. you even had publicly ministers actually openly publicly disagreeing with the proposals in Treasury's documents. Treasury's document speaks to ESCOM, but you had the Ministers of Public Enterprises and Minerals and Energy saying, look, they don't know about this Treasury document. They don't agree with it. So, that's part of the problem. But look, we were part of the ANC NEC workshop on the economy last week, Sunday, where we received five strategy documents and reports from government. So we included the Teachers Manifesto from Treasury, but also we received that comprehensive industrial strategy from the Minister of DTI, Ibrahim Patel. We received a strategy on mining and energy from Minister Gwede Mantashe, and also reports and plans from the Minister of the Public Enterprises, Pravin Gordhan, and the Minister for SME. And those kind of helped to kind of really put things together. The agreement with the ANC that those five different economic strategies need to be kind of amalgamated together. And by and large, we were quite pleased, for example, especially with the industrial strategy and the mining and energy strategies.
Yeah.
Presented by the two departments. There are core fundamental disagreements we have with the Teacher Manifesto, which we can't agree to as Labour. Specifically on two areas. One is the labour market section, where Treasury just woke up one day and got excited because that was really
of the provisions of that labour market action?
Sure. So it's a couple of things. It proposes to collapse the minimum wage.
Yeah.
8 months after the minimum wage has been introduced. They have not engaged the Minimum Wage Commission, which is doing research to assess the actual impact. So Treasury makes basically gross generalization about the minimum wage. So Labour would definitely, we can't accept to remove SMEs from the minimum wage, because that's all minimum wage is needed. You know, workers in the public service, the big construction companies, etc., are paid above a minimum wage. So we won't agree to its collapse. Tito had also proposed to basically collapse labor rights, labor legislation, labor protections, collective agreements, and so on. And again, those are not things we're going to agree to. We're quite pleased that even in the ANC press conference yesterday, that the ANC economic policy head, Enoch Godongwana, and even other ministers all agreed with us that the labor market section from Treasury's strategy will simply be removed. If government wants to bring that matter to NEDLAC to engage with business and labor, they are free to do so. But there's no way that labor is going to agree that we should pay workers less, as if that's going to grow the economy.
Yeah.
If that logic was true, then why do we have 40% unemployment rate?
Yes.
Because we've only had a minimum wage since January. So the logic is false, you know. there's other things which need to happen in the economy to see it growing. I think the other area of kind of other two areas, the one is around ESCOM, and we agree with the ANC that we need an urgent plan to stabilize ESCOM,
yeah,
and a longer term plan to kind of to grow it.
I think everyone agrees on that.
That engagement must happen soon, because we're running out of time. We need to have a plan in place by the medium term budget statement on the 50th of October.
Yeah.
And of course, we're running out of time. You know, ESCOM has run out of money three times this year. The 59 billion rand bailout by government, it's fine for now, but it's not a long term plan. So we've had proposals, and I think it's about kind of making the debt management more affordable for ESCOM right now. They've got debt of 450 billion. They're looking away. How can they reduce that by half to give ESCOM breathing space? That's one part of the equation. But then, of course, our thing is that, well, whatever the plan is, it has to be based on a certain demand. They must have a clear turnaround plan.
Yeah.
There must be a forensic audit so we know where the breathing is taking place. We need to audit all the coal contracts and all other contracts to know where the looting taking place, where there is still looting. And there's no point of putting in money if you're not dealing with the bleeding and the looting.
Yes.
Those who have stolen must be made guests of the state in the prison department. They must be put in orange overalls, and the assets must be confiscated. Because what's the point of you and me all contributing, through taxes or whatever, and then the looting continues?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think the other kind of core things around ESCOM is that we don't want to see any workers retrenched.
Oh, okay.
That's not going to help the unemployment problem. But if, for example, there is too much of a headcount in a part of ESCOM or wherever, then those workers who are affected must be reskilled and redeployed to other jobs within the public service, the public sector. And there are 128,000 vacancies in public service right now. So you could easily accommodate any surplus work headcount at ESCOM, for example, in the Department of Home Affairs, wherever you want, you know, and just reskill those workers. But I think also kind of going forward, we've made proposals to governments around how to grow ESCOM long-term. And that, for example, looks at allowing ESCOM to produce its own renewable energy capacity.
Yeah.
Also growing the electric vehicle industry, which can create a huge customer demand base for ESCOM. But ESCOM tariffs must be made affordable for local consumers and industry, and also affordable for neighboring states, so that we can once again export electricity to them. Because right now it's simply unaffordable, and that's why the customer base for ESCOM is decreasing rapidly. We're happy that government is finally realizing we need to have this engagement, and we need to do it quickly, and it must be done in a way which is a just transition for workers, for host communities, etc.
I guess lastly, as COSATU, what type of engagement would you like in future? Because it doesn't sound like you were happy with the way that this particular plan from the Treasury actually came about. If it was to be done again, or if it was to be redone in future, what type of engagement would you want Labour to have in such a process?
No, look, for us, what has been key is a social compact, social dialogue model like a NEDLAC, where you have government, labor, and business, because all of us bring something different to the table. All of us have a different role to play. You can't have one without the other. So even business was not a part of the discussion, a part of the solution.
Yeah.
That's why we had pushed for, and we were quite pleased when the president hosted the Presidential Job Summit, because it was based upon that tripartite compact, which is what you need to get the economy growing.
Yeah.
Part of Treasury's problem, I mean, it's simply a question of attitude. They had this Treasury strategy for the past 2 years. They were working on it. They didn't even bother to consult their own colleagues in cabinet or other departments, let alone to consult with business and labor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's really, and we need to have a sense of coherence in government. It can't be one department running around speaking about all other departments. You know, and look, some of the issues, we actually would agree with Treasury. We need to review the fuel price regime. It's too expensive for consumers, for industry. But Treasury doesn't come with a single proposal about how to make fuel more affordable, you know?
Yeah.
And you'll recall, you know, even then, that last year, September, the then Minister of Energy, Jeff Khadebe, had actually said they're going to review the fuel price regime. They asked for public comment, promised something in January. Now we're in October, you know, 10 months later. We haven't had a peep from government.
Yeah.
So you're really going to kind of get a sense of synergy. But I think the other thing which disappointed us so deeply about Treasury's strategy is that it didn't speak to Treasury's actual responsibilities around macroeconomic issues.
Yes.
It didn't speak to declining tax revenues. It didn't speak to how SARS only inspects 5% of import containers coming through our ports,
yeah,
which directly undermines our manufacturing industry, where government, on the other hand, through DDI, spends billions trying to grow the manufacturing industry. It didn't speak to how we have 50 billion rand unspent in infrastructure funds. It didn't speak to how, according to the Auditor General, that we lose 10% of the budget every year, about 150 billion rand, to, yeah, corruption and wasteful expenditure.
Yeah.
So we really would want to see Treasury actually just deal with those issues or come with clear plans around saving the SOEs. You know, that's the real kind of issue we need to expect from government, and not just a kind of rambling, incoherent strategy. We said, no, we must pay workers less.
Okay.
we need to be a little bit more serious than that about the economy.
Okay, so that's been us. We were with Matthew Pox, who is the parliamentary coordinator from COSATU, and he's just saying that in future, if such a plan from Treasury is to come through, that more engagement needs to be done, particularly from government together with the labor and the private sector. And there are a number of issues that they have with the plan around ESCOM, around the minimum wage, and the fact that is being proposed to be taken out, you know, just after it's recently been implemented, together with the fact that more needs to be done. He's saying that Treasury didn't highlight its own role in this, around, for example, tax revenue or just inspecting of containers that are coming in into the country. So thank you so much to him. As I said, he is from COSATU. That's Matthew Pox. Remember that you can keep listening to us. You can find all our latest podcasts on the Business Live website under the Podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On social media, you can like, share, and share this podcast with people that might be interested in some of these topics. On Twitter, our hashtag is BD Spotlight. And remember that you can subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. And remember that you can subscribe on those platforms, and don't forget to also leave a review. It definitely helps us there. Thank you to our amazing team. And then our producer is Paige Muller, together with our boss man, that is Scott. And then my name is Mudiwa Gavaza. Remember that Business Day Spotlight is a multimedia live production. So myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.